at 6 o'clock, so we'll call our work session to order. And the first people up are Bowers Development.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you getting us in.
Do we even have to use that anymore? We don't even have to.
It'll actually pick up the...
Oh, yeah. So you don't even have to use that anymore.
Don't need that?
No.
All right. Well, my name is Mike Licata, Vice President of Bowers Development. This is Brian Bowers, President and Owner of the company. We, as you already know, we purchased the three buildings across the street on Willett Parkway, the Radisson Medical Complex, and going to restore it into that medical service building and medical offices. We believe there's a good market for that. What we're here to talk to you about is that there's a program through New York State called Restore New York, and it's an excellent program. A municipality has to be the applicant, but then they designate a property, and we will take care of, as we have talked about earlier, Supervisor Wicks has mentioned, we take care of all the paperwork. We pay for any of the legal costs or any of the postage, all associated costs, and you support the project so that we can get funds from New York State to help restore that. Otherwise, if we do that project without any additional assistance from the state, it renders the pricing of the leases almost too high. We are of the few developers who actually pass the savings back to the tenants so that it's more competitive. So that's what we're here to ask your support in the application. And Supervisor Wicks has already mentioned, he allowed us to come in today on short notice because the application deadline is on August 11th for us to get the letter in. All right, so if you have any questions about the project or about the application, we're more than happy to answer.
So I think the biggest thing, like we discussed, any of the associated costs, and we'll memorialize that with our attorney, Mr. Rosigno, any of the costs associated with it, you're going to bear the cost of that. Any, like you said, the postage, any additional attorney fees or anything. And obviously, working with our attorney, he works for the town, so you know, right, we want businesses to go in. But that would be the understanding, that all the associated costs are bared by
100%.
Your company.
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Correct. There is, as part of the program, there's a 10% developer match.
Yeah.
You know, so we're responsible for that, but then you know, all the associated costs, correct, that you would incur, we'll cover those as well.
Okay.
So it sounds great. And it was Brian, right? And Mike, talk to me a little bit about how the money actually, what happens with the money. I mean, and is our accountant, our comptroller involved in that? I mean, there's going to be money that comes in. Where does it go?
So this program is designed, it's a reimbursement grant.
Okay.
So we have to do the work first, and then we submit all the paperwork to the state. The state comes back with a contract after the work is done, which sounds a little backwards, but that's their process. At that point, they approve the contract, you sign it, we sign it, and then all the contractor invoices, cancel checks, and waivers, we take care of all of that and submit all of that in one package.
Right, but I'm not against it at all. It sounds great, but in terms of just covering our concerns in terms of accountability and making sure everything is done right, I mean, I guess that gets written into the, I don't know, I'm just asking, how do we protect ourselves here?
So when this contract is done, if we don't meet our responsibilities in what's described to the state, so for us, phase one is exterior improvements. So they're going to want to see all the photographs, the siding, the windows, the doors, the landscaping. You know, and obviously have the contractor proposals, invoices, lien waivers to show that all that work was done. So, I mean, there is a very in-depth, like, audit process that the state does, you know, but all that paperwork will bundle. So what will happen ultimately, it goes through a pretty intense audit, you know, at the state level. If anything's missing, they'll come back, ask us for more information, documentation, et cetera. We get that to them. When their auditors sign off on it, that's when they release the funds to you as a municipality, and then it will come back to us.
So this program, I don't know anything about the program. It was set up where a private entity can do what you're proposing in this case and work with the municipality. That's how it works. I mean, why isn't the state just working directly with you?
Well, they allow the municipality to designate which project they want restored.
Okay.
So they give you the power of this is an important project. For example, we have a project in Utica that we did where it was just a blighted 14 years the building had been left and neglected, and it was a GE manufacturing facility. The city had designated that property, but no one wanted to do it. They had money from the state to do it. Except for us crazy guys, we came in and said, run the numbers. With that money on this project, we can make it make sense. Mm-hmm. And now that project's actually, about 50-60% complete. It should be done by the end of the year. We've got an international chemical company that wants to take the space and bring in 40-50 jobs. So that's a perfect example of the public-private partnership. City decides, municipality decides the project, we can be the developer, and then it gets redone, it gets restored. It's designed to restore beaten projects, frankly.
And what percentage of the total project budget will be covered by this grant about?
So as far as phase one, the exterior improvements, I mean, we're anticipating doing roughly $3 million, in phase one. This grant, if we're successful, would be $2 million. So, we would have to do a $200,000 minimum match on it. We would be in excess of that.
Okay.
So the municipalities, based on population, are given a finite number, and that's why the city of Syracuse might have a larger pot than the town of Lysen. So that's how it works. In terms of a percentage, it's just fixed. It could be 10%, it could be 20%. Depends on the act project.
It was truly designed, and I believe this program's been in existence now for 20 years. This is the sixth round of it. It's really intended for municipalities to have a pet project, if you will, or an old abandoned blighted structure that there's no way without the state's participation and funding that this project could actually get off the ground. So for this project specifically, what it's going to allow us to do is restore it, to a point where tenants are now able to come in, and see basically the potential of the site as of, you come into the site now, you see rotten boards, weeds. I mean, it's just, not a good impression as you're going into the gateway of Radisson. So.
Do you have to hold the buildings for a certain time period before you can hold 5 years?
5 years.
Yep.
That's a good question, because a lot of folks would get in and flip it. And, we're full service developers. We're growing our portfolio. We don't sell properties. No. We do exactly that. So we're fine holding it for 5, 10, 20 years.
Have you already taken title to it?
Yes.
We have closed, yes.
Yeah.
So we good with that?
Yeah, the only question I have is, so outlay for the town, you'll reimburse us whatever monies we put out.
100%.
To get the grant application started. Sure. And then other than that, it's all on you until the grant money comes in, and that's just a transfer, which is all.
Exactly. So if it gives you a little bit more comfort, we've gone through this application process on more than one building.
Right.
So we're very comfortable and very familiar with the entire process. But yes, you've got it right now.
Okay.
We do everything, and we pay for it. You support it, and everybody gets a nice project in the end.
Right. Yeah, their comfort level is their attorney used to be my partner.
Okay.
I started practicing, so I know him very well.
Okay.
He does a great job in this kind of stuff.
Okay.
Does a lot of it, so we'll be fine.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
So now you can just go through, have your attorney go through Mr. Rizzigno and.
Okay, we have some contact information now. So
yeah.
We'll be good.
Okay.
So we got to add that on the agenda tonight, right?
What?
Do we have to make a motion to?
Not for granted.
Okay.
No, I just want.
You guys need to submit a resolution of the town board approving the project with the application.
I don't believe so. I believe at this point, what's due on the 11th is actually the letter of intent from the municipality as far as what project they're submitting. The actual formal application, which the resolution would have to be a part of, would be, I believe it's October 11th.
So this is just a preliminary. We're interested.
So you have to identify the project and say, this is us. We're doing
it.
We want to go forward with this. But that's what's due on the 11th.
Yeah, I knew that there would be some kind of official town
resolution.
I think what the state's trying to ascertain is the legislator approved $250 million total for the state. To see the letters of intent, that would
And then so you'll be coming back to us with a more formal resolution on
in October.
Right. Okay.
Well, Tony will have it anyway. But right. You'll write it up for us. Okay.
Okay.
Good.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, good.
Look forward to it.
Yeah, that I didn't realize how beat up that those buildings were over there. They were really bad. So I remember, like I said, Roseanne, my wife, you know, used to take care of those buildings years ago, and they were pristine. Now it's, you know, it's going to be a crack house if we let it go any longer. Okay, town board meeting date and time change. That's you.
Yeah, I put that on there. I had a resident ask me just because of the village has their board meetings the same night as ours. I know that we talked about this before, about changing the date, which, you know, some people had concerns, and I agree with those concerns. The only ask I would have is if we can still keep them on the Thursdays, which they are, but just move them to the second and fourth Thursday of the month instead of the first and third.
That's well, we'd have to move the...
Right, we would have, they would have to do the planning and zoning the first and the third, and we would just rotate with them, if at all possible. So that way people that are residents of the village can attend those meetings as well, too, if they want to. That's all.
You have to remember, we have our people, like our attorney and others, specifically key to that in their schedule, so they might not be available. We've had that date for 8 years now.
Do you want to check with the planning attorney? I mean, it's just like tonight, there's a village public hearing on an apartment complex. Most people wouldn't have the opportunity to be here and there. And this, I think we moved the meetings to Thursday when Supervisor Sears
was... Why don't you do the first and the fourth?
Do the what?
The first, like you do now, the first Thursday, and then do the fourth Thursday.
The village meets the first and third, just like us. So I wouldn't want people on the village. You know, people from the village, if they want to go to the village meeting, the first
that, day, you know, it was this concern I brought up. You know, if it,
I get it.
Yeah, I mean, I would take it back.
It's been here 9 years, and it's never been an issue till now, but okay.
Yeah. I mean, well, we did talk about changing the date before a couple years ago, and it wasn't, you know, because some of us, you know, had day jobs, and those dates and times didn't work for us, so, yeah, I mean. I don't know.
So could you bring it back to the planning board and just ask them and see if there is any flexibility?
Our next meeting we'll talk about, because we couldn't do the first week because that wouldn't allow for the paperwork to get through county. That's why we need the second, because they need on the 10th.
Well, how many?
We could do the third.
How many months have you had two meetings?
We never have two meetings.
Right.
Unless we've been in a project where we've had to call a special meeting.
Right.
We only meet on the second Thursday of every month. Right.
So can you try, bring it back to them to switch to the third? If more efficient.
Yeah, see if you can.
So can you see if you can switch?
Oh, well,
so,
you know.
See if you can switch that to the third. See, and if you can't, you can't. But see if
you can. I'll check at our next meeting with our attorney and the other board members, because some of them work too. Right.
Of course, yeah. We've got to make it fair for everyone. So,
well, nothing's saying we can't check with the judges either.
Right.
Maybe they wouldn't care.
Move their dates, yeah.
Yeah, move their day. You know, I don't know. That's an option, too. I mean, there's
I'll look into it for you and let you know from our perspective.
Yeah. From the plan, okay. Yeah. You want to check with the judges?
Sure.
See if that would be an issue with them? Because if we could flap a Tuesday for a Thursday or a Wednesday for a Thursday.
Would Tuesday or Wednesdays work for you guys, or would you want to keep it at Thursdays?
Tuesday and Wednesday would be fine for me.
I know.
I think it's Mondays that don't work.
Right. I remember it was Mondays. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Mondays.
Or keep it the way it is. It doesn't matter to me.
Right.
Yeah. So. Oh, all right.
Well, let's go back to the planning board and see what they can do, and if they, you know. If it becomes an issue.
If you guys go first and fourth, you'll have meetings back to back.
Yeah, right. We can't do that.
We can't do that.
Yeah.
That wouldn't make any sense.
No, it would either be 2-4 or 1-3 or, you know.
Yeah.
All right. I'm good.
I already knew we weren't going to do that.
What? 1-3?
can't tomorrow.
Okay. Any more on that? Okay, no parking on Hayes Road. So I think that we might want to hold off on this because I checked with Marty Goss from the county and had a conversation with him. And there were other residents on Hayes Road that were looking to get additional signs on Hayes Road, no parking signs where they had been there before. And I talked to Marty and I asked him about that, and he said that from the county's perspective, they're okay with the town doing something like that. The only thing that they would want us to do is when the highway superintendent went out and placed those signs, they'd want to be part of that to ensure that where we were placing them wasn't encroaching on their right of way or what they needed to do. So if we wanted to extend the no parking down a little farther, we could do that as well. And after, and I've been down there, I drove that road the other day, and some of the comments that were brought up in our last meeting, I agree with them. There are parts of that road that probably people shouldn't be parking on. So I think that it would probably be a good idea to put some no parking on those roads, and I think that we can maybe go down and take a look at it with Ken, and then see where it makes sense to put them and come up with a more comprehensive resolution other than the ones that we're talking about right now. Probably would extend it a little farther. So what I'm suggesting is that we table that for tonight and then go back and take a look at it and maybe come up with additional spots to put them down there.
Could we keep the public hearing open?
No, we closed.
We closed.
We may need to advertise again. We're going to change the...
Well, I didn't do anything. If we decided to do that, what we'll do, we'll...
It's going to take a while to put the signs up anyway.
So we could have the public hearing the next meeting when we come up with it, and then put the... By then, we'll... If once we decide where we're going, we could kill two birds with one stone, and then maybe have Ken a chance to meet with Marty Voss, because I think the best thing to do before we just say, hey, we're going to do it here, have Ken go out, if everyone's in agreement, have Ken go out, and I'll go out as well, and we'll meet with Marty Voss, and then take a look at where we would want him, and we'll have specific locations. We can use GPS to do that. You got it in your truck, so we could even put them along with that. So we'd have specific locations where we're gonna put those signs. Then we could advertise in the next meeting for the public hearing. Tell them exactly where they're gonna be, and then because it's gonna take time to get the sign. How long does it take to get those signs made?
Those smaller ones with lettering. It all depends on what day I turn it in. We have kind of a partnership with Clay. So usually it's pretty quick.
Pretty quick.
Within a week or so, yeah, they get right on.
Okay, so I mean, by the end of by school time, we could probably have them up by the end of September.
I may have some in stock as well.
Okay.
Already.
Do we ask Marty Voss that if they already have no parking already on that road, because there are some old signs around the bend that say no parking?
I didn't ask him because he said it doesn't matter to them.
Yeah.
If we want to put them up, we can put them up. You know, he said that's a town prerogative. They just have to get the okay from the county as far as the placement.
Okay.
So I wasn't worried about they had them before.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's some there. I saw some old ones up there.
Oh, yeah.
Old,
but, and there's some further,
yeah,
a lot further down the road too.
Yeah. So I think what we have to do is go down, take a look at the placement of them, and take a look at where it makes sense, because there's some blind curves there where, if people are walking on that road, it makes sense not to have people parking out there. So, all right. So what we'll do the next meeting, we'll schedule a public hearing, but in the meantime, do you want to call Marty and set it up and let me know, and then we can all go down there? Or?
Yes, I can do that.
Okay. All right. Lysander lights on the Pop Warner field.
Yeah, I asked for this to get on the work session I stopped in the night that the Pop Warner Board of Directors was having their organizational meeting for the year, and they were telling me about their lights on their field not working and wanting to go to LED and the cost and among those other things. And I know Kevin had talked to them earlier in the year, and I don't think they ever got back to me with any kind of formal information. I sent that to you today. Probably the first time you saw it is what I get.
I've seen one of their quotes.
Okay. So.
Their first one.
Okay.
Not this $1 million quote?
No.
Right. There was a quote done by a light company for all of the fields at the park, and then there's also one that was done for the Pop Warner field. And the quote was about $54,000. And they have money set aside. They don't have that much money set aside. So I reached out to Senator Mannion and asked what's available, SAM grants, anything like that. One of his people got back to me and said they're moving the SAM grants to a CREST program, and they do anywhere from $50,000 to $250,000. But I think one of the issues we're going to run into is Pop Warner owns those lights, right? So that would probably be a sticking point for any kind of state grant. So, you know, this was just trying to bring people up on the situation. Without having lights, they won't be able to have night games, and that affects them for who will actually be able to come to play and things like that. They have plans in place with the Parks Department to, you know, possibly bring the portable lights over or talk about that. As I see Kevin smiling, maybe they haven't talked
to you. They haven't talked to you about it, have they, Kevin?
About
any of the lights.
Their alternative?
Yeah.
Not really.
Right. So I think there's a communication disconnect there.
Yeah, so.
But I, you know.
Like it just do.
Yeah. Well, it's.
Were those even the same lights that we have now that Norm had? Sells?
No, those lights were put in when I was a kid.
No, no, the on the proposal. Did you even look at the make and model of those lights? I didn't look.
No, those are.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're nothing along the lines of what we have in the park. I mean, it was just, you know, we have entities using the park that, you know, the 40 years ago when that agreement was made with Pop Warner and putting the field in and putting the lights in, we're running into these things where we don't own the lights, they don't want to put money into the lights because they don't, you know, they're not sure if they'll own them in a couple of years. So it just came to my attention that we got a couple of things over there we probably want to solidify as we grow the park. You know, we're putting the new field in, we've got a lot more people using it. That field could be used by other entities that are running the park, and a lighted field would go a lot further.
Well, what's the, what we have a contract with them now, though, that's one of the problems, right? They don't want other people using that field.
Well, if the contract said we have the right.
We have the right, they gave that.
But I mean, with the, with the state constitution, with the gifting, I don't even know if the state can give a private entity money, can they? Like that?
No, we couldn't.
Yeah. We couldn't apply for a grant and give it to a private organization. Yeah.
Right. So that, you know, that comes back to where, you know,
we're
we might have to address that.
People, though. What? We're giving them, they're applying for the grant, yeah.
Yeah, but that's specifically for economic development.
That's set up that way. Yeah. No, I'm just saying.
We're stripping a sponsor on that thing.
Yeah.
We signed the papers.
Saying that this is a project we'd like to move forward.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just, this is an issue that, you know, it's our park, but we've allowed a different entity to actually own the lights in it. You know, we're into an issue where if we want to move forward with doing something with the park, we've got to get this agreement addressed.
Well, I think we're putting a new field on, because if we're going to put lights anywhere, it'd be on the new field, right?
Right.
Kevin?
That was going to be that was going to be my
I want to put field
my
on
comment.
It. Yeah.
You know, I mean, if because we had talked about lights on our soccer fields.
Yeah.
You know, we got two new fields. Why wouldn't we put them there?
I'd put them there instead of on the
multi-use fields, soccer,
lacrosse. Right. I mean, this is talking about an agreement. I just reached out to see what was available.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that I just wanted to bring the board up to speed on something that we might have to look into on.
Right, but here's the thing with the Constitution, with the gifting clause in there, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tony, they own the lights, so we wouldn't be able to give them money to fix those lights. So one thing would have to happen. They would either have to donate the lights to the town, and they become our lights, and then we use them whatever way we want to use them, and we would have to charge them for it. So they would have, so some further discussions with them moving forward, if they don't want to repair those lights and they want to donate them to the town, then we'd have to take a look at, do we even want to take them? You know, I mean, what, and I don't know, Kevin.
Eventually, and you and I have talked about that, and I've had a conversation with Jeff about it, perhaps eventually, and if we do that, the interest would be to add lights to certainly our new field and other fields.
Pickleball court.
Right, but we have a bathroom building over there that has to be taken care of first. We have parking that has to be addressed first. We've got playground grant, so playground that has to be addressed first. So lights is
on the bottom of the list.
Fourth.
That's fine. Yeah. I know a couple of you haven't been here, but this is also an organization that has mutually worked with the town for 40 years now. So there is some value in that. So let's not throw this away. I know other organizations are paying for us, and you know, we have soccer, we have lacrosse. With this, you know, if we move forward with something with them, maybe they will turn the lights over to us, and maybe they'll help us get there to put the lights on that field for the time being until we decide what fields we want to do or what future investments there are. I'm just bringing this to the attention of the board. We have a unique situation on our own property, and then that brings up the other part of where we put the new field isn't in the village, you know? We've got to sit and decide, do we still want to be in the village? Do we want to be out of the village? Do we want the whole park to be in the village now? There's another thing we haven't addressed. It's just, there's things that are old that need to be addressed to move forward.
Why is it an issue, though?
Well, we're going to have a town park that doesn't all sit in the village. I mean,
but
so if something happens on that parcel,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe the police don't respond because it's not in the village?
No, they'll still respond. It's part of the park. They'll still respond.
I mean, the previous supervisor wanted it in the village for all of these additional things we could do, but I never saw that come across.
Yeah, and I don't know what the additional things would be, but when the general public goes out there, they don't know those jurisdiction lines and, you know, whether it's parking. I just don't see what the issue is, whether it's in the village or out of the village is. I don't see it. That's why I was asking. I mean, why do we need to? It's not like we're looking for water or anything that we have to get. We already have. Why do we have to annex it into the village?
Well, originally I thought we annexed it into the village to seek additional grants and funding for the park, but I haven't seen any movement forward on that.
Because I think if the village would have to do that, then we're doing it on our own. It's our park, so we're.
Well,
we can still apply for the grant. I don't know what they did before, so I can't speak to that. I'm just saying, moving forward, it's our park. We're gonna ask for the grants, and we've got them. We continue to get them. You know, we've just in the past year and a half, we've gotten $350,000. I mean, it's not like we're not getting them, but I don't see the need to bring it into the village to and go through the process.
Oh, I'm not saying it has to go into the village. Just as they have to bring it back out of the village.
I don't know why we need to do that either. I mean, we already did. I don't know. That's what I'm asking you. I don't see the need to do any of that, unless there is a need that I'm missing. I just don't know.
No, I don't either. But I'm just saying we have this parcel that's all village except for this part here. And why we didn't or did do it or will do it, I have no idea. But there's things that, as we move along, we don't take care of these things. You know, we have people that own lights in the town park that we don't necessarily want to do anything with, or maybe we don't want to field there, and that's, it's our part.
Well, I don't think anybody's saying that. I think what Kevin was saying was there needs to be some other discussions, and he's been trying to have those discussions, and they were the ones that put the lights up, but we do have other, you know, we got to finish the soccer field. There's additional parking. That's a critical issue in the park. So if we were going to do one or the other, parking is more critical, right, Kevin, than lights on the football field. You know, then we'd have to have conversations with them to say, okay, you know, they're privately owned, you know, or if you want to have conversations with us to turn them over to the town, then maybe we can start looking at additional funding to update those lights. But in the meantime, we have bathrooms that we have to, we got a grant that we have to get done. I mean, that's, when does that one have to be completed by next year? That bathroom grant? I think by the end of
2 years from when we executed the agreement, which I don't think happened until January or February this year.
Of this year, yeah. So we got, so 2 years from then, so we have to get those bathrooms done. Then we have the other grant for the playground equipment and the fitness area that we have to complete, and then we'll have a timetable on that. So, I mean, if they want to come in and talk to Kevin, I mean, he's been waiting for him. I think you tried to get conversations with him.
We had a meeting set up, and they couldn't provide what we needed, so I'll reschedule. Yeah.
Kevin, if it helps at all, I mean, these kind of situations I don't think are all that uncommon. And, you know, Onondaga Lake Park, some of it's in the village of Liverpool. Some of it's in the town of Salina. Some of it's in the town of Geddes. So it's not like the park has to be all in one entity. And my recollection in terms of why the previous supervisor wanted to encourage us to annex at least some of the park was for the police response. That was what I was told. And maybe, Peter, you can remember differently. I don't remember anything about grants. And as far as private entities being in the park, boy, that's an old story, whether it's the Onondaga Yacht Club asking Onondaga County Parks to do something. Wait a second, that's your building, it's not our building. Or the Syracuse University Boathouse, can you fix this? Well, no, we have other priorities. Or the Luke LaPorta Little League Field. So I just want to reassure you that what we're dealing with here is kind of typical in the parks and recreation world.
Right. You had something, Gene?
That business of the park and the village was all to do with the previous supervisor wanted the village police
to
patrol it. That's in the village police, and they couldn't patrol it if they didn't own it. So they made an agreement was made for them to take over ownership, but I don't think it ever was completed. I think it's all fell apart, and the supervisor got pushed out. That was the end of it. But the idea was to have park police patrolling the park.
That was done, right?
Yeah, that was done. It's not an ownership thing. It's just a jurisdictional boundary, and it was certainly for police protection. People were concerned about.
Yeah,
and the fact that with the driveway is in the village. The soccer fields, you can go over 500 feet. Any entity can go outside the jurisdiction 500 feet. So that covers that whole soccer field. So it wouldn't prohibit them from doing whatever they needed to do on that soccer field. And all they're going to be doing is responding to probably accidents and things like that. But any police agency has 500 feet that they can go outside the jurisdiction, and they still have authority to do whatever they need to do. So that would encompass all of those fields.
Okay. Oh, and very good. And if
you would certainly know this better than anybody, with a 911 call, it's going to be the first available to respond anyway.
Well, they give it to, if the village is available, they give it to the village first. Okay. But if they're not available and it's an emergency, then they'll send whomever, the state police or the troopers. Yeah.
Right.
Or state police or troopers, state police or the sheriffs. Yeah, you're going to get somebody.
Yeah. Okay.
So whoever you talk to, I think they should, you know, meet up with Kevin and continue those discussions to see where we want to go with it.
good.
Okay, there was, I think that was it on that.
Oh, the planning projects.
Oh.
Water, sewer capacity.
That was you, Al.
Oh, that was me.
Oh, that was you?
It was me, yeah.
Oh, that was Al. Sorry, come on.
I've sat at planning board meetings, and, you know, we approve projects, some of them are 10, 12, 14 years old, and then they finally come into development. My question is, you know, does that count in when we approve a project for 20 homes, and it doesn't get built? Does that get accounted for in capacity of sewer, water? You know, how do you know that person's ever gonna build it, or 15 years later, I don't know, 600 more houses are built, and that guy says, well, I got approval for 20 homes. How does that work? And my question is, should there be a sunset or a review at a planning level? That is there, you know, should there be a certain time frame that this ends? That a developer, change of hands last year in Radisson, developer started the project 15 years ago. There's a private road that we have issues with and the people aren't happy on. And another developer picked it up, has now started the build, and the planning board's hands were pretty much tied because of a previous planning board approval that would allow private roads or the way the use was, because this developer didn't really change the overall scheme of what was going to be built. But our codes have changed, some of our town laws have changed, and that doesn't have to get followed because of prior approval. And I don't even, I mean, I'm just asking, I don't even know if they have a sunset.
If they don't build it.
Well, I mean, what I mean is planning. You know, we've put in certain laws or rules, but that wasn't the law at the time it was approved. So, could you explain it better, Al, or
maybe.
No? Okay, thank you.
I think what you're getting at is, from a sewer capacity standpoint, does that those houses, are they accounted for the wastewater treatment plant capacity, correct?
Right, that's part of it.
So they would be. So when the county reviews, when we send these subdivisions to county planning for review, we also have to notify them when they're approved, the preliminary plat for the project is approved. And they note that in their allocation of treatment plant capacity for each project.
Because a perfect example is Timber Banks. They got multiple phases there.
Correct. And all of Timber Banks, all of the units that were approved for Timber Banks are accounted for in the remaining capacity allocation at the Baldwinsville Seneca Knowles plant. From a water standpoint, there's very little concern from Aqua. There's more than adequate water. Lake Ontario is a big lake. Water doesn't seem to be an issue for us. Sewer has the potential to be an issue. As of right now, I don't feel that it is. One thing that should be considered would be projects that never start construction. We've got one project, which is Pompo Woods over off of Doyle Road, that is was approved in the early 90s. It was like 94 or 95. They have an active speed ease permit, never started construction. They have approved contract drawings with the town board. Horrible layout, so I don't know if anybody will ever build it anyway, but a project like that, because of wetlands and everything else, there probably should be a sunset clause on it if they never start construction. So if you don't start construction within probably 7 years, because that would be when you would have to redo your wetland delineation, you got to come back to the planning board and start over. Something like that.
Now, what about a project like in Radisson, where maybe a third to a quarter to a third of it was built, and then the other part sat vacant for 14 or 15 years.
I mean, they were still building homes there. It was still, there was still activity. I think they built a home there just 2 years ago, so it wasn't like it was zero activity for 15 years. They started, they were under construction. The lots didn't, certainly didn't move as fast as, you know, everybody would have liked to see, but there was always activity. I think the only problem would be is if you don't have any activity, that, hey, maybe we should look at revisiting this and taking it off of the county's sewer treatment capacity allocation. And it's a, but at the same time, developer put all that money into it, developed contract drawings. There's a, when we pass a resolution saying that we'll accept it if you built it this way, you know, there's an expense associated with it.
And sometimes don't they sell it to other developers after? So,
and then a lot of times that changes it anyway.
Yeah. So,
Jack, you want to weigh in on it?
No, I think Al's doing a good job.
Okay.
No, basically, when we go through that, I mean, the only time in the years I've been there, Al, correct me if I'm wrong, that sewer capacity came up an issue is when on the peninsula, talking about timber banks and the original Melvin Farm proposal of some 480 units on top of timber banks. And at that time, Al was having difficulty getting information from the county on actual capacity.
Still having those same problems.
They were claiming they were, might be strained, etc. Al finally broke down the doors and got the real information, and there was very ample capacity, and all those projects went through. But the record is kept at the county level of everything we approved. Like Al says, it has to go through. Now, there's no sunset provision right now.
Does the law even allow for that?
I
would think you could put a sunset provision.
You probably could. I mean, you know, how do you
do
just that? Listening, yeah, how are you going to define inactivity? Guy could come on there once a year with a bulldozer and move some dirt around. Might not be building anything, and they do that on certain sites. I'm talking about industrial development, which I have some experience with. I mean, that constitutes activity on the site,
right?
You know, but not aware that we should have, we do have, or appear to have an issue of capacity constraints for the future. But I'm talking from the standpoint of licensing. The real issue on capacity is the fact that it's not just Lysander developing and using that capacity. It's Van Buren, it's the village, it's, you know, Clay. There's no coordination between development between those different local entities. And, you know, Van Buren goes ahead with that huge complex they proposed on the other side of the river there. That's a huge number of units. The village is putting in apartments, proposing right next to that solar field we're reviewing right now. I mean, each individual looks at it from their own perspective. You see a different picture, perhaps, than you when you look at the holistic view of all the development that feeds off of those various plans. And all the years I've been here, maybe things are different now, but I know prior to your administration, there was not really an effort for cooperation between right here, Van Buren, the village, and the town. Even though the town tried to encourage it, it was not welcome. As far as planning, development, capacity, no entity wants to be limited. Now, wait a minute. Lysander, we're not giving you 500 units because we, you know, just all breaks down.
Yeah, and we don't have that now. I mean, they're not gonna come to us and say, hey, we wanna put in this development, is it okay with you? That's
no, it's never been in place and probably never will be.
Yeah.
Well, I just, you know, the one in Radisson just came to mind because I was there. Whispering Oaks years ago had a plan to go west to Dunham Road, and I don't know if that was approved or if that was like a different phase. And I didn't know if, you know, this developer builds phase one, walks away from it, but he's got an approval for a phase two or three. Does that give the opportunity, you know, so many years later for the planning board to say, whoa, we've decided those weren't great ideas that we had 5 years ago to allow this kind of building, but we've given that person a free ticket to allow that. Things change over time. You're working on the club, you know, if things get revised, you try to do smart growth and you try to limit, you know, sprawl.
Well, the revision of the things you're talking about rests with this entity right here. Planning board cannot create any of its own rules and regulations.
No, but I'm looking for suggestions from the planning board of, have there been projects of, wow, if we could go back and change this, this would have been a great opportunity to do it. You know, and then.
Well, not in my experience, since I've been here prior to that, perhaps, I don't know. What I do know is what we run into at the planning board is we go through an approval process. There's a need to change some of our laws because they create issues, or there isn't a law on the book that can prevent issues. Like we don't require developers to provide the town engineer with grading drawings of the lot layouts and the driveway location.
Right, so the driveway doesn't
all we get is the lot layout, right? Okay? And some gradation right now.
No, so that's really a code, the building permit issue. So a lot of municipalities, you have to provide a grading plan for each house being constructed. We don't do that here.
We don't do
it's not
that.
Part
so
of our town
then code. We end up with situations where we're approving a lot, and the lot meets code. But depending on where he puts that house and where he puts that driveway and other things can create issues.
And
issues for the highway department.
It's funny you brought that up because over in Seneca Knolls in that new development over there, they're having a lot of issues with that. So I think that's something we're going to have to address because I was talking with the town Van Buren supervisor and whoever the builder is over there. Their grading is causing flooding in next door neighbors' houses and things. So when she was telling me that I remember Al brought that up before. It's
right.
It's probably a good time for us to start thinking about that because of the issues they're having. You know, and without having that, we don't have any control over the grading
or driveway placement.
Right. So yeah. That's probably something we should be moving on fairly quickly.
Yeah, you know, I'm open to suggestions. You know, I know we've Al's told me about driveway placement with manholes or sewers and drains. They end up in the middle of somebody's property or a water valve in the middle of a driveway.
Do you got an example of one at a time? Well, maybe for the next meeting you can we'll carry on this conversation then.
But as far as sewer and water, that's pretty good.
The
well.
County takes care of it.
It's
okay.
Taken care of.
I just don't, you know.
No,
you approve a project
point.
For
it's
300 homes, and 15 years later, the guy walks in and
yeah.
I'm approved. Are we open for liability?
That's just expand. They did a $25-30 million expansion of one of their facilities, and they have the same ability to upgrade.
Yeah, so what they did was they. Did a design study to increase the allowed design loading of the Oak Orchard plant,
right,
in Clay, which is a sister plant to our plant in Baldwin's with Seneca Knowles, and they increase the design loading capacity of that plant by 40% at the DEC level, but the county had to, county owns the plant, so the county has to start that process, then go through that process.
The capacity there.
Right. Thank you.
Thanks, thank you.
Okay. That's all I have on our work session. If we're good, we'll close the work session at 6:51.
Sounds good.
We didn't transfer the ownership. They extended the boundary, the village boundary. Yes, we still own the park. They didn't give up ownership. They moved it into there so we could get police, but the idea was the Imogen Code licensing was too high to get a majority of grants. So by putting it in the village, the average income comes down to 50 grand a year. And it opens up more grant options. But the problem that can happen is if you want a grant to work on that field, you're missing out on it because there's a lot of grants that are not working. I'm not on the parks today, so I can't control that.
Nobody
wants to do this. Pop Warner has got half the money to pay for the light.
Good size. That's a nice garage.
He's going in private. He's in the
September, next month.
First game is his last day.
Oh, wow.
Yep. He's going to see each
other. Let me know what you said. I can't have you just doing that here. He's on the phone. I don't have to read it.
It's
got a
working on IT. Could you hear back here with the speaker?
That microphone right there, the red light, is supposed to pick everything up in this area.
That's it.
Hi, Nina.
How you doing, Pete? How's the summer been treating you? Good. Whatever kind of summer we had, right? Late summer, crazy
you
weather, off and on.
I can sleep in a little bit and read
late at night,
and I'm good.
That's
so
good.
How have you been?
Okay, can't complain.
How are we doing, Nina?
All right. I said to myself, gee, we didn't have a meeting in June because we had the benefit.
Yeah.
No July, no August.
Right, September 7th, I think, is the next one.
In September.
Yeah, September 7th.
That's
always a tough one for me.
I keep saying, am I going to retire? I'm not going to retire. Tell my daughter I'm tired. I'm going to retire. She says, but Mom, you're about the only one that does anything over there. I said, no, there's about five of us.
Do a lot.
I says, but I'm 83 years old. Give me a break. Yeah.
You are kidding me.
No. My body says it. Hello there, Jeff, baby.
What are you doing?
I dragged her out.
Yeah.
She dragged me out.
What did she promise you?
No.
Shut it. We're going to breakfast.
That's about. That's
you have to
about.
Go to the diner.
Which
in,
one?
The Plaza 31. No, I'm not. Or the diner. The diner.
Yeah,
Plaza.
Where?
I was.
Oh, the one 57 and 31.
Oh, I've been there. I go there.
And you speak Garden View Diner.
Yeah.
I go there. I go to Garden View all the time.
Garden View, it's the same owner.
Yeah.
I didn't know it closed on it.
How you doing, Bob?
Good.
How's the wife?
Oh, I never shut this off.
I never charged it.
I never shut it off.
Oh,
it's still on.
It's still on.
So you know.
Okay.
Well, one of the other towns.
Says anybody to
it borders right. It's going to border the solar. I'm pretty sure.
Still got it.
Pretty close.
Hi,
to being
Dina.
A town.
Good. How are you?
Good.
Close.
How do we do? How do you?
Right.
What would you like to see?
Yeah,
how about Step Brothers? I'm a comedy guy. I like it. All right, there you go. We tabled it. Yeah, because Bob wants to go down there to the county and just point out specifically where we want.
There's one on Herman or on
really?
Yep.
The Bow Road.
No, that way the location of the signs would be specific according to him, right? Down to GPS. And then you don't have to worry about changing it.
River Road. That's way in the back. Yeah, I know. Some of them are. Did you see the one on Church Road?
I wonder.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that one.
Can we?
Where is it? How far out?
This side of Mud Lake Road, from Dinglehole to Mud Lake Road.
I saw it. I thought it was far.
It's so horrible. That whole huge park there.
It doesn't help that it's a long road.
I saw it far. There's a lot of issues with solar and all these people that are pushing this green energy.
It's not good.
What do you do with the panels when you're done? What do you do with the wind turbines when you're done? What they do with them? They stack them up in the...
Plus you need oil anyway.
Yeah. Right.
the fossil fuels you need at the foundry to make those.
Well, not only it, they got oil inside them. I didn't know that. I was just talking to somebody that knows about it.
Right.
So, yeah, those things are made with oil. My son had it alone. All right. We'll call a meeting in order and start with a pledge of allegiance.
Pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hopefully everyone's had an opportunity to look at the minutes. If so, can I get a motion to approve the minutes as distributed?
I'll make a motion.
I'll second it.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
I'll abstain.
Okay, one abstention. One abstention. I didn't catch. All in favor? Any opposed? Okay, motion carried. So the next thing on the agenda is a public hearing to consider a block party in Glen Abbey Terrace. May I have a motion to open up the public hearing?
I'll move that.
I'll second it.
Is there anyone wishing to speak regarding the closing of Glen Abbey Terrace for a block party? Okay, so now, just so our highway superintendent is aware, you probably were, but with the block parties, we have to, regulation of town superintendent of highways to issue a permit for the holding of such street. Prior to commencing of the event, a permit issuing official would be required to block off that portion of the street to vehicular traffic except emergency hazard vehicles and the post detour signs. So I don't know that was done in the past, but we'll make sure that that's done moving forward. If there's nobody wishing to speak, may I have a motion to close the public hearing?
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay.
Citizens' comments. Anybody wishing to speak regarding the any town issue? Yes, sir.
Gentlemen, thanks for hearing me.
Yeah, you don't need to speak into that anymore.
Okay.
I don't even know.
My name is Chuck McFadden. I live at 3682 Hayes Road.
Mm-hmm.
My purpose coming to there was hoping I could speak at the...
Sir, if you could just move toward the microphone. We have a recording system
okay,
now.
Sorry.
The mic is on.
Oh, it is on?
Yes.
Okay.
So I live at 3682 Hayes Road. My purpose was coming today is this, hoping to speak at the study session so we could have some conversation about the parking on Hayes Road. I know you've tabled it, and I'm very happy that we did. My request was going to be that we could maybe not vote on it. I didn't want to make a motion on it. I have you guys make a motion on it because I think there's other issues than just with that half a mile which we were going to vote on. I'm a fire commissioner, and I'm a fireman. If you've ever had the opportunity to drive a fire engine down Hayes Road with 1,000 gallons of water behind you, you realize that the entire length of Hayes Road is basically unable for anybody to park on. Years ago, both sides of that road was designated no parking. Many of the signs have faded, which you brought to our attention, and many of them have disappeared when they put in the new gas lines years back. Most of them didn't get put back. And the same thing on the other side of the road when we put in the hydrants, many of them didn't get put back. So there's a handful of about a dozen of the signs left on Hayes Road on either side that are faded, need to be replaced. And there's other issues that I think if we're going to have a walkthrough and have the ability to install more, I think there's other issues that we need. The end from the boat launch to 37 is probably the only area where anybody could park on the opposite side of the fog line. But that brings up many other issues on the east side, on the even side of the block where the boat launch is a lot of residents there. Taking my hat off as a fire chief, I happen to live right there. Come home from dinner one night and 10 cars were parked on my lawn I was kind of watching them come out, and I asked the guy, three guys came from the bar and decided to have a tailgate party in my front lawn. I went over to ask them not to do that. I said, would you please leave? I got grandkids here. A lot of F-bomb stuff going on. They threw their bottles at me and peeled out of my lawn and took off. And so on that side of the block, I think we need to have parking, no parking on both sides of that area. And there needs to be more discussion than just that one side. I don't want to make this an issue at all. With personally, I'm doing this as a public safety thing. Don't want to make an issue with it being a tiki bar, but there's more issues than just saying let's replace a few here and there. I think that whole block, it needs to be put back the way it was when that whole block was designated no parking. We've got people crossing the street at 55 miles an hour. That's another issue. So if we, for God's sakes, if we can just get together and not make this a political thing and realize that someday someone's going to get killed on that road if we don't make it no parking. There's people crossing the street within a 40-yard area here, dodging in and out of cars, get from one side to the other, and most of them are under the influence. And I don't want to I've been to enough car accidents where I'm cutting people out of cars, and I don't want to go to one across the street from my house. So, again, I appreciate your time to listen to me, and for God's sakes, let's give us some more thought than just someone driving through and say, let's put a couple here, let's put a couple there. It's, the whole area, most of it, it's unpassable. I mean, unparkable. The only area you could possibly park on the other side of the fog line is from the boat launch to basically the Elms Lodge. And one side of that road is a drainage, so it's basically the even side of the road. Again, I appreciate your time.
I just have a question, if you don't mind. Yes, sir. That's a county road, right?
Yes.
You said that there was no parking signs on both sides at one
correct
time.
Okay.
Have you contacted the county at all? And if so, what was their response?
I've been in contact with Brian Donnelly, who's a deputy county executive. He directed me to some vehicle and traffic laws, safety laws. I believe it was 1660. I didn't come prepared to talk about that yet, but I believe something may later today. But yes,
about replacing those signs.
Basically, in that law that I've been directed to, you all have the ability. I mean, the jurisdiction to put them up ourselves. We even have, if I read that law right, the ability of the codes or a zoning guy in the Onondaga County supervisor roads to get together and even discuss speed limits. I'd be gladly forward you the law that I found that Mr. Donnelly directed me to. And we can, please read it. Let's make some good decisions on how it.
No, but why wouldn't they just replace those signs that were there at one time?
Well, because my understanding is they own the road, but the jurisdiction is turned over to the town. And so you guys, this town, can replace them. I mean, I will forward you all up what I read. I mean, I could be reading it wrong, but I don't believe I am.
I think I discussed that earlier.
I told you what. And believe me, I'm 100% happy with you, but I think that we need to get together as citizens and as a board and everybody and decide, where the no parking should be, because there's going to be problems at some point. We can piecemeal the road, no parking, no parking, no parking, or we could do it, bring it back to where it originally was before the gas lines and the sewer and the new water lines were put in. And I appreciate you mentioning that we table this and do a better job, do it some more thinking. But I just think that we need to do it properly, and let's make it safe for the citizens. I know. Most people think we're the Hayes Road Hicks, we're down here and that, but our lives are just as important as the Radisson people, and I'm very concerned about that. We sometimes get overlooked. I mean, if you drive down, you saw the signs. How did those signs ever get to the point where you can't even read them? Somebody somewhere, whether it be the village or the town roads guys or whomever that drives by, has to see that sign is unreadable, and whether it's their responsibility, they should be able to pick up a phone and call the county if that's their responsibility.
Well,
not,
that's why
I'm not a citizen doing that.
Yeah, that's why we tabled it, and we're going to have another and we'll have another public hearing, and we're going to be down there and walking with the
commissioner of DOT for the county, and you know, we'll do as comprehensive a job as we can within the limits of our authority.
I understand, and I would just, you know, as a commissioner of the fire department, if I don't know, so to be involved with it all, you know, to share some insight with you guys as you walk, I would love to do that with you as well.
We can give you a copy.
Yes, I appreciate that.
Just so you understand, we don't have anything in our town code law where we saw that no parking signs were ever approved by the town board. The original place.
So, in the New York State vehicle and safety laws, it's under theirs. Section 1660, it's in there that where the county, when it turns it under New York State, when any county turns a road over, the jurisdiction of a road over to a town, now you have the jurisdiction. You have the jurisdiction to put in lighting, any crosswalk signs or anything you want, according to this law. I mean, again, I mean, I could be reading it wrong, but I was directed to this, and I don't, you know, I just think that when, I'll gladly send it to you all, and maybe smarter people than me can read it and decide if I'm right or wrong, or if we as a village can, or a town rather, can make this right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Anyone else? Yep.
I'm Liz Schmidt, and I live at 3695 Hayes Road, and thank you again for hearing yet another public comment from me this evening. I'm going to follow up with Chuck McFadden's comment and just refer back to the last board meeting on 7/14. There was this discussion, and Supervisor Wicks did explain jurisdictional issues that come, in fact, with the road, in particular with Hayes Road as well. And there was an agreement to request a traffic study, and the town clerk graciously kind of explained to us what the traffic study would entail and the time that it would take. After that meeting, upon review of New York State laws, which Chuck has already referred to, and a consultation with Onondaga County and people there, I do believe that the town has a lot more jurisdiction than we've been led to believe on the 14th, and that the town might be able to shorten the time for public safety to be fully addressed on Hayes Road. And so this is New York State Law, Title 8, Articles 37 and 41, Sections 1622 and 1660. 1622 refers to speed limits on county roads and town highways. And it says the Department of Transportation, upon request of the County Superintendent of Highways and the Town Board, that they actually may establish maximum speed limits at which vehicles may proceed higher or lower than the 55 miles per hour. You know, Hayes Road is a U. It's not a thoroughfare to somewhere. It's not a shortcut to somewhere. You go on Hayes Road because you have business there. Either you're frequenting establishments or you live there, or you're visiting someone who lives there. There's just no reason that it needs to be 55 miles per hour over that U. There's just no reason, and the road isn't particularly built for it, as we've kind of discussed in terms of the width and the lack of shoulder as well. So the board and county can request a lower speed limit. A traffic study is not required in order to do that. Also under Section 1660, traffic regulations in towns, again, the town board can regulate traffic by means of traffic control signals. They can also have the authority, if a parking signs are passed and it comes down to enforcement, they also have the authority where parking is prohibited to remove the vehicles and require the owners to pay a reasonable charge for their return. So it would be up to the town, or it would be within the purview of the town, to enforce this parking ban if it were to happen. And finally, regulate the crossing of the roadways by pedestrians. In summary, the board has the authority to initiate a lower speed limit without a study, to enforce the no parking regulations if passed, and to install a pedestrian crosswalk, even with a crossing signal, which may be called for on a road where a business and its parking are on opposite sides of the road. And specifically, there's a specific business in mind. On the winds of Cold Spring Harbor Marina, there are hundreds of customers that come on the biggest band nights between April and October. And most of the parking for that establishment is across the street. It is across the street at a third-party owned lot. Often the crossing is going to be occurring after dark, okay? And it's a dark road. And so this is a significant public safety issue. And the board does have the authority to implement the measures to enhance public safety under these laws as well. Thank you for my time.
I was wondering if I could just clarify something, and Tony, maybe you can, and Liz, if I can just, when we say, correct me if I'm wrong, when we say a traffic study, we're basically requesting that the lower speed limit, but we can't implement the lowest speed limit. This is how I understand things until the state says okay. Correct me if I'm wrong on
I
that.
I think you're right. When they say, you know, need us to study, the state's not going to change the law without a study. So okay. Even though the law says we don't need one, we're not going to get a change by the state.
And
you're arguing that the Department of Transportation would not respond to a request by the county superintendent and the town board to immediately lower speed limit?
They don't normally, I mean, our experience is they never immediately lower the speed limit. We are always in support of anybody that comes forth and says, we'd like to have a lowest speed limit on XYZ road. I mean, we pass that like that. We never say no. But we're not at the mercy, but we have to wait for the state. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but that's how we've always done it. And, you know, we would like to, you know, I'm guessing we would love to see a lower speed limit on Hayes Road, and we'll ask for that request, but we can't just do
it. I am concerned about the timing of the traffic study.
Yeah, I hear you.
Because one of the biggest sources of traffic on this road is from April to October,
right.
Not really the start of school.
Okay.
I mean, school bus traffic is pretty limited, and not as concerning given the safety precautions with the school bus.
Sure.
So I think the biggest traffic concern comes from those summer months, particularly after dark.
Anyone else wishing to speak tonight? Okay.
Really good question. My name is Holly Magic. I live at 3692 Hayes Road, and I'm reading the agenda, and I noticed that there is a motion to hold a public hearing Thursday, August 18th to adopt updated zoning map for Town of Lysander. I was wondering where I could get more information to be better prepared for this public hearing.
Yeah, you want to tell her
So the draft map will be posted on the website. All this is doing is there's been three parcels that there's been zone changes on since the last map was adopted. So that it'll reflect those zone changes. And then there's one parcel that's currently owned by ESDC that was part of the Radisson PUD that when the 2016 map was adopted was incorrectly shown. So we're correcting that error, and we're updating it to reflect the zone changes that have occurred since the last map was done.
This is under where on
the
website?
The public
we'll have it up. Now that they're setting the public hearing, we'll post it tomorrow.
On the website?
Yes, on the town website.
Okay.
But
you.
Just so that you know, the public hearing that we're having is not going to be to approve the zone change. It's going to be to send the new map to the state. That's basically all it is.
Right, but I think if we have issues with it, not saying that I do. You have what, 60 days to appeal those things?
I don't know what, we're not, like I said, we're not approving anything. We're just sending it to the state.
As
right.
I say, it's a local law, actually, so we adopt it as a local law. That would be subject to permission referendum if you wanted to challenge it. But if we're not, you can only challenge the changes that we're making, what would be challengeable. So if you're specifically saying that you would like to challenge the zoning of the tiki bar, that wouldn't be part of this local law.
No, I'm just wondering what this was pertaining to so I could better prepared for the meeting.
Okay.
I think the other part of it is that these zone changes were already approved through public hearings years ago. They're just not on the map right now. We just need to reflect those changes on our map. That the processes were done, followed. It's just we haven't updated the zoning map when you look at it over there on that board. So it's not, there's no new zone changes. These have been approved over the previous years that just we haven't updated that.
And all the information will be on the website?
Yeah, it's actually right on the map up in the top corner. It reflects that's the map that's currently approved, but the draft map reflects the parcels that are changed.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else?
My name's Ed Schmidt. I live at 3695 Hayes Road. Just to follow up to Holly's question, are any of these zone changes along Hayes Road?
No.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Anyone else? No? Okay. Town board comments. Start with you, Mr. Rowe.
None for me. We've got a busy night, so.
Likewise, done for me as well.
Well, I have a couple, but they'll be really quick. So As you may know, I'm on the Canton Woods Senior Center Board, which is just a wonderful organization serving residents, not just of the town of Lysander, but the village of Baldwinsville and the village and the town of Van Buren too. They're always looking for money because it's a not-for-profit agency, even though we, the town, both towns and the village, participate in the funding of the facility. So there's a golf tournament, September 12th, at the Hickory Hills Golf Course. It's a fundraiser. It's $50 a person. You get food. You get 18 holes of golf, the whole bit. If you'd like to support Canton Woods in that way, give Canton Woods a call at 315-638-4536 and get yourself signed up. The other one is closer to heart. One of the things that the Canton Woods does is oversee a bunch of other service groups, and one of them is the Beeville Express. And these folks are the folks that volunteer their cars in driving people to and from hospital and doctor appointments. They're really short of drivers right now, and people who really need to go to the doctor and don't have their own transportation rely on these folks. And so if you're willing to help, and you don't have to commit yourself every single day, but here and there once in a while, give Canton Woods a call and they would love to see you participate. And the third thing, I just have to do a hats off to Kevin Merrill at the Parks Department. I had asked him a couple of months ago to consider doing something with chess for kids, teaching kids how to play chess. And he did, and I took my two grandkids there the other day, and there had to be a dozen little kids learning to play chess, and I just thought that was the neatest thing in the world.
That's just the beginners.
And that's just the beginners, right?
Yeah, there's like 30 kids, right?
Yeah, so good job, Kevin. Oh, cool. And actually, let me do an advertising, so it's every Wednesday,
at
3 o'clock at the pavilion there. Thank you very much.
And pickleball for kids is still going on too, every Saturday.
Every Saturday morning. You still haven't brought your son yet.
It's too early. It's 9 o'clock in the morning.
Goes till 2.
My kids sleep until 1. My son until 3 tonight. He's a night owl.
That's all I have.
All right. I'd like to thank everyone for showing up tonight. Everyone who came up and gave their comments, thank you very much. Thank you for watching on PAC. We have our new system here. I don't know exactly how it all works, but I'm guessing somewhere, sometime, people are going to be seeing this. So thanks for watching on PAC, and hope everyone's enjoying their summer. That's it.
Okay. If you didn't notice, Mr. Yeager put in his resignation, and it wasn't because he's mad at us. He's looking to move on and advance his career, but I want to publicly thank him for the time I've been here. I thought he did an exceptional job, and I'm sure that he's going to do great in his future career, so I just wanted to publicly thank you. There was one other thing that I had. I didn't write it down, so I can't remember what it is. But anyway, so that's good enough for me. Department head reports. Mr. Rivaziga. So you, Mr. Mayor.
We are that much closer with the permit from county to put some form of safety devices along or between Hankel Boulevard.
Let them know what you came up with.
We're just working on a place 24 inch more or less diameter boulders, if you will. They're just large rocks, but they'll serve as at least some form of a barrier. I mean, it'll be on the other side of the ditch, so
and you had ones out like that, similar to that in Jamesville, and they did the job, right?
At Jamesville, they did a fine job, and there's something that we can still manage to handle. Anything bigger than that, we'd have to get much bigger equipment and move into place, so these are something that are manageable.
And when I looked at the drawing, the boulders are going to be in between the fence and the ditch.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The length of the field.
Yeah.
Okay.
The county, and that's because the county wouldn't, the county.
of guardrail on Norwood that we even talked about widening and deepening the ditch. They wouldn't do anything with the ditch either. So our solution of the boulders is pretty much the best option.
Okay.
But we're just waiting for that, and we have to send that permit in, and then they'll sign it, and then as soon as we get it back, we can place our order and put some boulders on top.
And the parking lot should be finished, the additional parking there should be finished.
Yeah, we're just waiting for, Al was waiting for some materials to come in, and then we're just waiting on Tiroli to come back. They got called out with some, a lot of different jobs with Aqua, so we're just waiting for them to come back and finish off the what would be the northern ditch along Smoky Hollow, kind of just the corner of Smoky Hollow and the park driveway. We're going to put a pipe and a catch basin in there to kind of lessen the depth of the ditch. It's a pretty dangerous ditch for staff to go around and string trim. They're getting cold, you'd have to string trim. But
I haven't seen anyone park in that new section. People even know that it's there.
On occasion, they will. I've noticed the current users, they don't want to park there because then they have to cross the driveway. They have to walk a little bit.
Once it gets cleaned up, it might be a little easier.
It's opened up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it really, it is open. But once it's done, I think there'll be a better message there that it's done open.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Anything else?
That's it.
Mr. Sweetay.
Nothing for me tonight.
Nothing. Okay, here we go. This is Golden.
You have a copy of the report. We sent out a total of 8,593 preliminary change of assessment notices in March. Informal meetings were held during March and April, and 307 of them were scheduled, and I actually ran out of them. May 2nd, the tentative roll was filed, and an additional 210 change of assessment notices were mailed. Grievance day was Tuesday, June 7th, and Tuesday, June 14th, and a total of 241 property owners filed a grievance complaint. The final assessment roll was filed for the county and the state on June 30th, and the New York State Office of Real Property Tax Services have reviewed and verified that the 2022 equalization rate or level of assessment is at 100% for the town of Lysander. And attached, you will see that we are one of the very few in Onondaga County that can say that. The Cornell seminar appraising July 17th to the 21st was very informative. I attended two-day classes. The first one was valuation of utilities and the changing face of retail. I earned 24 continuing education credits, which gets me back in the good graces of the state since all of our classes were canceled for the last couple of years because of the pandemic. And I've already submitted the paperwork to the state for reimbursement because you only have 30 days from the time you get back from class to get the paperwork to them. Otherwise, they don't consider that to be reimbursable. And the town of Lysander received 6 small claim filings from homeowners to date, and no new Supreme Court or commercial property filings this year.
Good.
Question.
I have one, but it concerns the what we're voting on later with the.
Yeah, we can. You want to talk about that at that time?
Okay.
It's up.
Yeah, why don't we talk about that?
Yes. Okay.
Then, and one more.
Sure.
I was reading the Messenger today, and I don't know if you had read it, but there was an article, a letter to the editor. Salina tax policy targets low-income seniors. Have you had a chance to look that over at all?
Oh, no, I haven't. Okay. I haven't seen it, no.
Well, I'm trying to get the gist of what the person was complaining about. She felt that town of Salina, low-income seniors pay their fair share of property taxes. They required the IRA capital gains to be included in their annual income application. I mean, is that all state-required?
Yes.
Items? Okay, so that's not the town of Salina.
Yeah.
Or the town
no.
decided.
No, there are specifics For each exemption, there are specifics. They're referring to the senior citizen limited income exemption. And actually, in the town of Salina, they benefit from the deduction for unreimbursed medical expenses, where in the town of Lysander, that's a local option that has never been passed. So the way it works in Salina, any medical expenses that you have that are, you know, prescriptions or whatever that aren't covered by your insurance, they deduct that from your income. And it's really a bookkeeping nightmare because it's hard for assessors to ascertain what was reimbursed by the insurance company and what wasn't. And, you know, what maybe a duplicate receipt, you know, those kind of things. And so basically you just get a calculator and you add it all up and you take that out. So the senior citizens in Salina are one of the very few towns in Onondaga County that actually have that benefit because Salina has passed that local option. But the rest of it is all, you know, pretty much administered by the state. There are guidelines.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Ms. Fricata.
Hello. We are gearing up for budget time at this point, so we're going to try to digitize some things and present some additional information to you guys, which I think will be very helpful when you're making your budget decisions. I'm almost complete with our West Phoenix sewer variance project that we were doing, so that is almost done. I think that me and Al are going to try to set up a meeting with them next week and bring that to a close. So you guys all have that as well, and I'm sure that you'll have questions on that, so just let me know, and I will do my best to answer them for you. And we're just working on modernizing some systems and digitizing other forms that we use, as well as business as usual.
Okay. Our town clerk, what do you have for us?
So Monday we started selling hunting licenses, and it's been pretty busy in the town clerk's office. So those the doe permits will be on sale until the close of day on October 1st. Then there's a month off, and then they resume back in November. So if anybody has any questions about hunting licenses, come see me. We're happy to help, and we have better customer service than Walmart or Ronnie's. So.
Should be a lot more this year because people can't afford meat.
Maybe.
Cheaper to shoot it than to buy it.
If you can find that.
I don't know how people look at prices.
If you can find it, yeah.
It's cheaper to shoot it than it is to buy meat now. Or.
And another thing is, too, that a woman from the audience, forgot your name, I'm sorry, but you were talking about the maps, the map that we're going to be doing. If you go on the website and you see the map on there and you can't really see it very well, I can print out a nice copy for you if you want to come in and grab it. I'll also put some on the bulletin boards as well. So sometimes it's nicer to have a piece of paper in front of you to actually look at the maps than to see it online. So that's always an option for any map that you would ever want. So just let me know on that, okay? Also, I will miss Al as well because I learned a lot from him. And I didn't know what a culvert was until I started working here. And he's taught me a lot, so I'm gonna miss him. He's a wealth of knowledge. So thanks, Dad. And I'm excited about golf with our kids. Okay, thanks. That's all.
Another reason to have cake.
Great.
Right. Okay. We'll move on to the regular agenda items. As we discussed earlier, motion A, we're going to table. Motion B, may have a motion to approve a block party on Glen Abbey Terrace on August 27, 2022 at 4 p.m.
I'll move that.
I'll second it.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. May have a motion to hold a public hearing on Thursday, August 18, 2022 at 7 p.m. to adopt a local law to update the zoning map for the town of Lysander.
I'll move it.
I'll second that.
Did you move it, Pete?
I did. Sorry, I didn't speak. That's okay.
Pete's fine.
So who seconded it?
Jeff.
Jeff, okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. May I have a motion to advertise for bids for the 2022 Town of Lysander Swale Clearing and Pond Mowing Contract. Bids will be due in the town clerk's office by Wednesday, August 17, 2022 at 10 a.m.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Any discussions? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. May I have a motion to authorize the town supervisor to sign the agreement dated July 14, 2022 with Bonadeo and Company, LLP.
I'll move that.
I'll second it.
Any discussion?
Have we, I know this is about policies, but has anyone contacted the Association of Towns about if they have any policies in place or any other municipalities around us to see what they do?
Regarding
policies. This is about policies, right?
Yeah, we have. Yeah, we got Islip, and every town is different, you know, depending on what it is. But yeah, we have.
Because this is about spending that $8,100 to write policies, correct?
It's the policies that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Pagano. Policies, when we're talking about spending money, they're all specific to the different towns. I mean, you can take a can policy, but we want to develop them for our specific town and how we do things.
Right.
So that's what, and it's more about the flow of information too. It's how it goes to the planning board and who should sign off on it to ensure that we're following GASB rules and also it's a clear line. Clearly delineated where the information goes, who signs off on it, because in the past the town hasn't been that clear with it. But there's, I mean, every town's a little different when it comes to that.
We also want to make sure we have the adequate internal controls in place to mitigate error and fraud as well, which is important.
I mean, I know we've talked about this previous months. It's come up, and I just feel that I seem to think we could do this on our own without spending additional monies. I mean, we've got department heads that have pretty much been in place for years that we should be able to write up the policies and the procedures of how we take payments, receive payments, send payments out. I just feel like we should be able to do this in-house without spending additional money.
Well, part of the problem, I mean, we have a problem with West Phoenix right now because that wasn't done correctly. We got a problem with the lighting district because it wasn't done correctly. And part of this process is to, when you have a comptroller that's been here for 30 years, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm not putting any, you know, talking about our comptroller. I think he did a great job, but it's just good accounting practices to have people come in and oversee what your practices are, what your policies and procedures are, so that you don't have these problems moving forward. Not only that, they get to look at our books, and if they see anything that's out of whack, then they bring it to our attention and we can fix it. That's just a good accounting across the board, as opposed to, that's part of this process was, that's why we didn't get a full-blown audit. You either get a full-blown audit, but they actually talked me out of doing the full-blown audit and going with this process because they look at all our policies and procedures, and if there's anything that's out of whack, they identify them as they go, and we found a number of things that were not done correctly, and that's with because you have the same people looking at it all the time, and sometimes it's just like when you write a letter. Sometimes you can't see your own grammatical errors in a letter because you're the one writing it. And that's the same thing with internal controls. If you don't have an outside entity looking at these internal controls, you don't know if you're doing it correctly or not. It's always it's just good accounting practice to have an outside entity to come in periodically, and we haven't done it for a while, and to look at your internal controls.
and not do it yourself. Any accounting book that you can look at will tell you that. That's accounting 101.
So when we found errors, who found the errors? You or the Bondale Group?
It was a combination. I think that it also bears mentioning as well is that this is just an extension of what you guys agreed to in December of 21. And what happened on that same date was the current controller that you had in place resigned. So the contract was approved for Bonadio to do this work, and instead a lot of those monies were taken up by them performing as the controller for the months until I got here. So I think that's part of this as well. So instead of that allocation going to policies and procedures, a lot of the money went to them performing as the controller for the end of December, January, February. But it's a combination. I found things when Tanya was here, she was performing as the controller for 2 months. She found some things and areas of weakness. So it's been a combination.
Well, we were just talking about West Phoenix. You found those errors in West Phoenix, the accounting errors. You found we got a bill from the village, and you found the errors in the billing with the village. So, so she's doing it as well. But even she's brand new. In order to protect our controller, and as I said, it's good. It's just good accounting practice to have an outside entity come in and look how you're conducting business to ensure that we're doing it the right way. Not that there's any fraud, but there always could be. But even if there isn't, it just solidifies and identifies areas that are either running smoothly or areas that need improvement.
Right, but this isn't auditing. This is writing policies and procedures for us that I feel that we just need to write them down and over as department heads and the town board, you know, other people just need to look it over and follow that process. I mean, later on tonight, we're looking to move $67,000 out of the unassigned fund balance to pay Bonadio Group to, you know, pay for a new controller, and so this would be part of that. I just feel that this could be done in house. That's where I'm at.
Well, specifically, the money for that letter is coming out of
wasn't part of that conversation in December of where are we getting the money from. I asked again in January, and here we are finally in August taking care of that. I mean, this is nothing against you. I just feel that we have good people here that could probably write these procedures. I just think there might not be people following them, and even if we write them, will they follow them?
Well, if we write them, they'll follow. But the problem, the question is here, how many people here have an accounting degree?
I don't think you need an accounting degree to know that when the planning board approves a development, there's so much money to come from the developer, and you write it down and you tell the controller what's coming in and what it's going to be for, and the developer has a specific PO number or whatever you decide. And I don't think you need an accounting degree to come up with this procedure. And if we do, I really question where we're at as a town, because a lot of towns don't have this written. Maybe they're in just as much of a mess as we were. But to pay a company $10,000 to do this for us, I think we should be able to do it ourselves. But I'm one of five.
Well, I disagree with you. I think you need professionals to do some of these things. We are sitting down and doing policies and procedures, and I had a lot of experience writing policies and procedures. We're going right through our whole manual, the employee handbook, which is... when I first looked at it, I saw the employee handbook and the policies and procedures were all commingled, which is not a way to do it. It's just too confusing. Plus, a lot of the policies and procedures that were in there were very generic. They're not specific enough that to ensure that things are running the way that we should be running. Now, in saying that, there's a lot of things in there that, yeah, we can do. But when it comes to accounting, when it comes to auditing, you need people from the outside to take a look at what you're doing. Otherwise, if what you said was the case, if we had people here that can do these things, why are we having issues with the West Phoenix sewer district? Why are we having with the lighting district? Why are we having that? Why did we have $50,000 that wasn't collected from in lieu of parks? I mean, there's a number of things that were going on, and I don't think that, I'm sure that none of that was done intentionally, but obviously there needs to be outside professionals to take a look at our accounting and our money practices in the organization. Not specifically, not blood-borne pathogens, that's not what they're doing. Not vehicle use policy. We can write them, and we are. But with these specific things, you need professionals to do that, and I disagree with you.
Well, the thing that you mentioned about the handbook policy, that was outside, outsourced, correct? Didn't it?
The what?
The policy, the handbook policy.
Don't look at me.
That was outsourced already. We had it. Didn't the town already have a company write those policies? So now
you mean a human resources, the handbook policy. You're talking about human resources.
Yeah. The town already had a professional company write those policies, and now we're going to rewrite them. So why don't we try to write these policies ourselves first?
We did.
And then if they don't work.
And they were, as my recollection was, we wrote them, and then we had an outside company take a look at them and making sure that we had the I's dotted and T's crossed.
Yeah, and now we're going to redo them again.
Well,
human resources is different. Is different than
we're
talking about the fiscal environment of our town. So I'm with Supervisor Wicks. If you want your fiscal house in order, you want someone who works with money to put that house in order.
Yeah, that's why we have a comptroller here.
We have a comptroller to keep track of the comings, the revenue,
and the duty auditing as well.
Not necessarily.
That's the responsibility of a town comptroller.
Yeah,
I didn't finish. What I'm saying is if we're going to write policies to document the method that we need to document the coming and going of money, we want somebody or some entity other than, the elementary teacher, the phone salesman, the retiree. We want someone who works with money to put those policies together so that they're using the same practices that accountants across the state would use for municipal accounting. That's what I think. And you know what? It's not free. I get it. It's not free, but it might be worth it to make sure it's done right.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Opposed.
Opposed.
Okay, motion carried. May a motion approve the budget modification forms as provided by the town comptroller. Want to explain?
Hold on.
I'm getting ahead of myself. May I have a motion to approve them provided by the town comptroller?
I moved it.
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion?
I just have one thing. In the future, if we could break up each budget modification to the account it's coming out of and what it's paying for, because there's a couple, I know you just put it on one page to try to keep it easier, but I'd like them separate so it's easier for the public to see the account we're debiting, the accounts we're crediting, and the reason why. That's all.
Sure, absolutely. And they are all in order, so every section starts with
but
where it's coming from and then where it has to go. But yes.
But if it's like the bottom of the O group one, then if the public gets it, there's not like
no
checking
problem
across multiple accounts. Thank you.
So if she did, so we have about 15 here. You'd want 15 separate sheets of paper.
No, but because no, these transfers are for about three things.
This would be three instead of one, basically. So.
But to the public, a lot of people won't understand it because they don't look at debits and credits and, you know, negative numbers.
Are you speaking of each section? So, for instance, just as an example,
the judge's stuff would be separate.
Yep.
The, you know, unassigned fund balance to go in for paying for bookkeeping and auditing expenses and all that. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No problem.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. May I have a motion to authorize the town of Lysander to decline participation in New York State NRR program, non-reappraisal reassessment, maintaining 100% assessment.
I will move that.
I'll second it.
Okay. Any discussion? I'll start off with this. When Miss Golden and I were talking about the assessments coming up for this next year, our assessments are based on the previous year's sales. So we were looking at between a 14 and 15% increase for next year, based on the sales from last year, correct?
Yes.
So then we also took a look at, because the different towns that don't have 100%, and the reason we have the, and I checked with our legislator, Brian May, who was on the town board at the time, the reason we have 100% assessment, because it's the most fair way to do things. If everybody's house are being assessed for what it's valued, they're paying their fair share of taxes to go towards keeping the town and the school and everything else. But what's happening is she actually brought in an example of a neighboring town that isn't at 100%, but she compared a $200,000 house in that town and a $200,000 house in the town of Lysander. Very comparable. If you looked at them, they looked almost exactly alike. Both appraised at the same price, but when you looked at the school tax, the town of Lysander was paying $1,000 more in school tax. Well, why is that? Well, the state is supposed to come in, if the town is not at 100% appraisal, they're supposed to come in and equalize that. So theoretically, they're supposed to bring that up so that a town in the, or a house in a neighboring town valued at $200,000 going to the Ballinsville School District would pay the same as a house in the town of Lysander that are paying school taxes in Ballinsville. That's not happening. So if you look at, and I don't have a good example here, but houses are in a bell curve. We're probably at the peak of where houses are selling at now. And I think we talked about it. 2019 is when this housing market went out of whack. So people are paying, and I'll use an example that I know of in Radisson. When you go to sell your house, you'll bring in a realtor, and they know what the houses are valued at. So this one house in Radisson was valued by the realtor, and they were valuing it high at $449,000. Because the market was hot, so that's what they said this house was worth. Well, that house sold for $539,000, $90,000 more than what the professionals in that market believe that house was worth. Well, why is that happening? There's a number of reasons why it's happening, but it is. So the people in the town that are selling their houses are making a windfall, but the majority of the people, especially the people that are on a fixed income that are going to stay in their house, are getting murdered by this, financially devastated by the inflated cost of these houses. So when we looked at it, and I talked to the other board members, we want to be at 100%, but right now it's peaked out. there, if we left it the way it is, we'd be looking at another 15% increase, even though the housing market's coming down. So I suggested that we ride it out for a couple of years, because even if next year we're not at 100%, so the state comes in and does their equalization, well, people probably make out better than they would if we were at 100% anyway. So it's not hurting anybody to do that. But by the following year, the second or third year, we should be back to an equilibrium where houses are selling for what they should be selling for. Now, if a house in 2019, if a house was valued at $200,000, they're probably not going to be $200,000 3 years from now. They're probably going to be at $230,000. But they certainly aren't going to be selling for $275,000 or $300,000 like they are now. And who really gets hurt by that the most? People that are younger, still, you know, two people are working or they have good jobs. Do they like the inflated taxes that they're paying? No, they don't like it, but they can absorb it. But I know of at least one individual that's living on fixed income of a small pension, carpenter's pension, and a small Social Security check, and his wife just recently passed away, so he lost that income. Those are the people on the lower end economic spectrum that are really getting devastated by this inflated housing market. So my suggestion to the board, and hopefully we pass it tonight, was that we ride it out for a couple of years, let that the housing market come back to where it should be and stabilize again before we look at going back to 100% assessment.
Teresa, I have a question for you. What happens if, worst case scenario, prices keep going up and up and up? After the second year when we pause this, then what? Are we going to do increases 40, 50%?
It would depend on the market.
But if the market went up and
if
kept going up?
If the market continued to go up, you know, that is a possibility. But what is happening right now, because Supervisor Wicks spoke to this, our valuation date is set by law, and it says for each assessment roll, it's as the property exists on March 1st. So that's why the exemption deadline is March 1st. If your house is done and finished on March 1st, you get a full tax bill. If it's not, you probably get a partial tax bill for that year, because taxable status date is March 1st every year. But the kicker is it's valued based on the previous July 1st. So we're almost, when we send notices out in April or May, we're a year behind what's actually happening in the market. And there's no way around it. That's what the law requires. So the last 4 years, prices have gone up. This past year, this assessment roll saw increases that assessors that have been in the business for 20 plus years have never seen. The problem is where we are right now and where we're going to be next year, you know, roughly a year ahead, I think are going to be very extreme. Interest rates are going up, they've gone up twice already, but the full impact of that has not shaken out. So I think it would be almost a perfect storm if we decided to keep the assessments at 100%, knowing that a year from now, nobody has a crystal ball, we don't know how bad it will get, or how much those interest rates are going to cool the housing market down, or how fast. But where I'm coming from with this, so that's the main concern for me. That valuation date being a year back, it's always very hard to explain to property owners, and they don't want to hear it, especially when interest rates have gone up. And I started the conversation with the supervisor about this because of the fact that when I considered everything the town board does, typically, you have a public hearing, you get that input from the public. If you consider what the assessor's office survived and went through from the middle of March until the third week in June this year as a public hearing on our assessment practices, the resounding answer was they're fed up with it. They don't want it anymore. They don't want to understand why we do it. And they're basically just tired of it. So that's when we started having the discussion about, do we want to continue? Do we want to take a break? Where do we want to go from here?
You know, if I can chime in at this point, I can't think of a more patently unfair way to raise tax dollars than property taxes. It is the most unfair way to do things. So I would be in full support of passing this thing where we're gonna get away from full value assessment, because, and let me explain why I just said those volatile words. There were members of Congress this year who actually proposed taxing unrealized gains on your capital investments. Like, how dare you? I have money that I've invested, I haven't done anything with it, and you're going to tax me on unrealized gains? Well, guess what happens in the housing tax market? Every time we raise assessments, or any municipality raises assessments, we're basically saying, you've sat in your house for 20 years, you haven't sold it, your house value has gone up, guess what? You're going to pay more money. But I didn't get that money. That house, it could be worth twice what I paid for it. So the whole property tax equation, in my opinion, is so unfair to people who have been in their houses for any length of time. If you buy a house at $500,000 and you're willing to pay for that money and you've got the money to pay for it, then you should pay taxes on $500,000. But 30 years from now, when all you could have afforded today was $500,000 and you're now retired, how dare you say that, you know, guess what, you should pay taxes on a house that's worth $750,000. But I'm not making, my kids may end up selling that house. I'm not going to sell it. So I support this because I am so thoroughly upset with the way America taxes people in their communities to raise money. I think there's a much better way. It's certainly not through property taxes. We're not going to change that. All we are is a little town of Lysander, and the state of New York is obviously not going to change this. But for the record, I hope what I just said makes sense in terms of a philosophical approach to why it's inappropriate to keep raising assessments on people who are not going to realize the gain in the value of their house.
Well said.
So what does this cost the town of Lysander if we're not at 100%?
Nothing.
Just to give you
a little bit of background without keeping us here all night. When the town of Lysander first started the 100% assessment, I believe it was 1999 or 2000, they were at 10%, they did a townwide reevaluation, they brought everyone up to 100%. And from that time going forward, so past 20 plus years, the town of Lysander has been at 100% assessment. For the first 10 years of that, roughly, the state basically said, if you maintain your assessments, it's the right thing to do, at 100%, we're going to give you $5 a parcel for doing that, for the expenses and, you know, the additional costs and all of that. Roughly 10 years ago, that money went away. No one gets it anymore. So at this point, there is no incentive for a town to remain at 100% because that money has gone away. And because if you looked at that assessor's report that had the equalization rate page that said we were at 100%, if you look at the other towns in the county, they range from a little over 1% to 100%. And there's only, I think, 6 or 8 of them now, and 2 of them are Van Buren and Lysander, that are at 100%. Everyone else has thrown in the towel and said, you know, we've had enough of this. So it will not cost the town of Lysander anything not to be at 100%, because the state will use their equalization rate process to equalize across, you know, for school, across boundaries for school taxes and for county taxes. That's the only thing that the equalization rate affects. The people in town of Lysander pay their town taxes. It doesn't have to be equalized because everybody's in the same township. So it doesn't really cost the town anything. Now, if you were to go, you know, the longer you go without maintaining assessments, the more out of whack your assessment roll can become. and you've seen some articles about the city of Syracuse and how their assessments are, you know, need a little work. The longer you go without doing a reevaluation or updating your assessment role, the more out of whack it can be and unequitable that it can become. And if it gets to the point that it's out of whack, then the state says the only way that you can fix it is to do a townwide reval. That, and then that would be an expense for the town to bring everyone up to 100%. That's the only cost.
Okay, so how does this change? If we vote on this, how does this change how your department runs?
We won't be sending out change of assessment notices based on market-driven values.
Explain to them. Let's talk about...
So basically... Yeah. We won't be analyzing the assessment roll and determining which neighborhoods are below 100%. The state will equalize the town. Physical increases, all the new construction, if you put in a pool, if you add a garage, all of those things are still going to happen. We're still going to administer the exemptions. Everything remains the same. We just won't be chasing that 100% target with the state.
And how long would this be for if we vote on, if we approve this?
Well, actually it can be, because you're just making a resolution to not participate in that non-reappraisal reassessment program. You can revisit it annually if you decide to. It's entirely up to you.
I mean, I just hope that everybody understands. School district's still got the same nut to crack. The town still has the same nut to crack.
Yep. Yes.
Your tax rate might change.
Yes.
But your assessment might not.
Yes.
Okay. So since we got you here, how come condos aren't at 100% assessment, right?
Condos are not at 100%
Can we make
assessment?
Them 100% though?
Condos are not, because of a law that was passed, I believe, in the 70s that came out of a situation downstate, particularly New York City. And so what the condo law actually says is a condo is not a building. So it can look like a house, it can look like a townhouse, it can look like an apartment building. It's the form of ownership is a condo. And so they had a situation in other parts of Onondaga County a few years ago where they actually built houses, single family houses.
Yep.
They got a roughly 40% tax break. Because they were owned, they were in a condo ownership situation. And the way it works and how
they revised that law since then.
Well, actually, they haven't. Actually, it's on the governor's desk right now, and we're hoping after 20 years of fighting that she's going to pass it. But it will not affect condos that already exist.
Right.
It's a local option. As soon as I hear that it's passed, I will let you know. But it will affect condo ownership properties going forward, not for the existing properties. And what it says is, whatever is in that condo ownership, what's condo one or condo two, you value it based on the income that whole complex can generate, and then you divide that amongst the percentage of the ownership. So if an apartment had 5% of the ownership, you would add all those apartments up, you would value them based on the income approach as a whole, and then an apartment would get 5% of that value. So that's basically how it works. The problem, and it works pretty good with apartments, because apartments are pretty much normally rented. But when you get into townhouses and single family homes, you can't generate enough income to offset the difference between the sales comparison approach to value, which means the market value driven. So that's where you get that. That's where you get that difference between what the market says it's worth and what the income says it's worth.
Okay.
Anyone else? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Opposed.
Any abstentions? Motion carried. May I have a motion to accept the resignation of Town Engineer Al Yeager effective Friday, September 9th, 2022.
If we don't make the motion, you can't leave.
reluctantly.
Okay. Any discussion?
Al, I just want to thank you for everything you've done, all your patience with me. I ask a lot of questions sometimes. Thank you. And thanks for teaching me. I knew what culverts were. But I don't know how much more I knew, so thanks.
Any other discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. May I have a motion to accept the resignation of Melissa McConaghy as assessment aide effective Friday, August 5th, 2022?
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. Okay, I'm going to add, there's some motion J. I'm going to add some language to it after August 5th, 2022. So may I have a motion to appoint Melissa McConaghy as assessment clerk effective Friday, August 5th, 2022, with benefits and salary consistent with the administration labor agreement.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Any discussion? Okay, what this is, we have an employee, Melissa McConaghy, that she was appointed to an assessment aide way back, and they never had a test for it. And once they, and you can correct me if I'm wrong in any of this, once they had the test, the information that was tested, there was no study material or anything else like that. So she actually didn't pass the test. But her real job, the job that she's doing is assessment aide, which they don't have a test for. But by appointing her to that assessment aide, that's assessment clerk, thank you. Assessment clerk, that's the job that she actually does day to day. And so what we were doing, she's a very good employee. We want to keep her, so this is we want to make sure that she gets the most opportunity to keep her job as we can provide with her. Now she's going to have to pass that test. If she doesn't pass the test, we can't help her out any more past that. But we're confident that she will pass the assessment clerk test. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. May I have a motion to accept the resignation of Amanda Riley as court clerk effective Friday, August 26, 2022.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Any discussion? So it may seem like we got a lot of resignations lately, but Ms. Riley is... she's leaving us because of some family issues that she just can't work out and keep her job here with the town. So we're sorry that she has to leave, but it's something that she has to do in order to meet her family obligations. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. Okay, I do think there's a reason to have an executive session tonight because we need to get some legal advice regarding potential litigation, also to discuss the work history of a specific employee. May I have a motion at 8:14 to move into executive session?
I'll move it.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, we're in executive session.
Do you think we'll be making any motions
yet? We won't be making any. We won't be voting on it.